Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC. And I feel inadequate.
Okay.
PCs get viruses. We can't do as much out of the box.
I don't know why you're so hard on yourself. I don't get it.
Mac, why don't you say something positive about PC?
Okay, easy. PC, you are a wizard with numbers and you dress like a gentleman.
PC?
Well, Mac, I guess you are a little better at creative stuff.
Well, thank you.
Even though it's completely juvenile and a waste of time.
Maybe you should come in twice a week.
Best 30 plus minute album conversation you're gonna hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah, joining me today. He's never been a cup of tea, didn't like.
I was just drinking one.
I wish you would have spit it out all over your microphone and had sparks everywhere. Also joining us, he has a beautiful beard. He looks great in plaid. Buster Heine is here. Buster?
Hey.
I mean, Heine. Gosh.
Whatever.
You'd think I would know by now. We got a lot of great stuff planned for you guys this week. You know, it's actually kind of been kind of a slow news week, but nevertheless, we have scrounged together an amazing show. And we're going to be talking about WatchKit, the new API that Apple has released for developers for the iWatch. We still don't know when that's going to be released, but we're going to be talking about some news around that. Why your next iPhone could have the best camera sensor ever made. There's been some rumors circulating about this, and some of them seem to be somewhat credible too. So we'll be discussing that. We're going to be wrapping up the show also with a kind of new segment. We're calling it Under Review. We've done this before, but not under that name. We're going to be talking about some of the stuff that we've all been reviewing, and it's cool because we get to review stuff all the time, you know, and it's nice to be able to talk about what we like and what we don't like about a product. So stay tuned to the end for that. We'll be reviewing some stuff. Before we jump into all the laughter and riotous fun, I want to give a thanks to Lynda.com for supporting this episode. That's Lynda. .com. You know, last time Lynda supported the show, which I think was 2 weeks ago, they had just about 3,000 high quality video courses for you to choose from, all taught by industry leading experts. They now have 3,119. You can master virtually any application with Lynda.com all on your own time and at your own pace, and they're always adding new stuff. And now, instead of a 7-day free trial, you get a 10-day free trial. Head on over to Lynda.com/cultcast. That's Lynda.com/cultcast. I want to thank Lynda for supporting this episode. Speaking of amazing stuff, Leander, you want to talk about Uber, or as our friends at DigiDNA/Amazing call it, Uber.
Yeah,
all those great French people.
Right. I know it's been like a super fun train wreck all this week.
Uber has been.
Yeah.
What's been going on?
You haven't heard?
I haven't heard. You would think
goodness.
You would think I would know. I mean, I've heard some Uber news, but I haven't heard anything bad. What's going on?
Busta?
I'll just let Leander go tell.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I can start making some stuff up if you guys want.
They've had it. You couldn't make up anything worse than what's been happening. I mean,
it's not bad.
Well, they get tons of bad press, right? Because they're so aggressive and they're such a bunch of D-bags that almost everything they do is you know, they do wrong. And then so they had this, they're going on this you know, so-called charm offensive, right, where they tried to meet up a bunch of reporters in New York. They took into this fancy restaurant and they were trying to charm them. And then off the record, one of their top executives says that he actually hates reporters, and one of them in particular, and that they were thinking of spending $1 million to get together a team of researchers to dig up dirt on reporters and then release it secretly in the press to try to give the press a taste of their own medicine.
Wow. So,
this is a BuzzFeed story that broke like on Monday, and it's been an S storm since.
It's just been great because Uber's done nothing but like help everybody hate them ever since it's come out too.
Right.
You know.
Go on.
Well, like the exec said, you know, he wants to like blackmail journalists essentially. And then the CEO yesterday goes on like a Twitter rant and says, oh, you know, well, that's not really how we believe. But basically issues like a 13-tweet non-apology And then everybody gets pissed off at that. And then Ashton Kutcher this morning comes on Twitter and he's just like, guys, I don't see what's so wrong about wanting to dig up dirt on shady journalists.
Did he really say that?
Yeah, he's like, what's so wrong with that, guys?
Oh, my gosh.
And, of course, Kutcher is an Uber investor.
Yeah, right. Wow. You know what's funny is I was going to come into this conversation and play devil's advocate, which I told you, Leander, before we started, because I thought we were going to be talking about how Uber was integrating Spotify into their apps so that you could play music, you know, when you know, from your own playlist when you're driving around San Francisco. And then also, I have never understood. I'm not saying anything good or bad about Uber. I've used them once or twice, and I've had mixed experiences with them. But they always get great press. People are always talking about Uber in the press. And it's something that I feel like most people probably never use outside of the tech world. So yeah. Here I was prepared to actually play devil's advocate and tell you guys about my bad experience with Uber. Now I feel like I got to totally switch and be like, oh, Uber's the best. Why are you guys saying all these things about them?
Yeah, no, it's more about the company culture because they're so hard charging. I mean, it's like, you know, they are the epitome of this, you know, aggressive bro culture, programmers, you know, like they're just
programmers. That is a term I have never heard, but I feel like I should
never
have
heard that. No. Yeah. Well, the guy that runs it, Travis Kalanick, you know, like he's a super aggressive guy, and they like, you know, it doesn't really matter. They got, you know, they fought with everybody from the get go. I mean, like as soon as they launched in San Francisco, they're fighting the taxi cab commission and they were fighting the city hall. And then they go into New York. They got banned in New York. And then they're fighting in New York.
But I kind of feel like you have to be incredibly tenacious and kind of a D to break through in this industry. Because, I mean, the taxi cab industry has been pretty stagnant for like, what, 20, 30 years? And they probably have a lot of blockades in place to prevent companies like Uber to come in and disrupt things. So you kind of would have to be somewhat aggressive.
Yeah. Well, there's a difference between being like aggressive business wise and then threatening to like investigate journalists because they're saying things about your company that you don't like, you know,
that like, there's no way that could have been serious. Do you guys think he was being serious?
I guarantee you was serious. Like the idea that that's being thrown out at Uber, like whether they're doing it or not is what, you know, has pissed a lot of people off because they also like. Part of that was Sarah Lacey, who used to run TechCrunch, was told like that the Uber executives could look at like her ride history and other stuff like that to basically threaten her.
So they could be like, oh, I don't know, Mr. Caney, you sure have taken a lot of Uber rides into the stripper district. Right. Are you sure you want to publish that negative article about us?
This is what people are worried about, you know, that they have no ethical compass at all. And that they will, you know, that they'll do anything to win. And so this is what people are. They say, okay, it's a bunch of journalists now. It's one journalist, you know. So what? But people are raising the point that they could easily do this. You know, go in and look at all this data that they have on all their customers, and you know, who knows what they can do? They can't be trusted. They're D-bags.
I mean, even if it's, you know, not a journalist, if it's a customer, you know, they wanted to silence like an angry customer and they're threatening to do things like that, too. It just could get even worse. It's just horrible.
There's no way that can be legal, though. If they did something like that, they would be hammering the nails into their own coffin because no one would use their service if you knew that they were going to use it against you later if you said anything bad about them.
Well, that's what people are starting to, you know, tell people about on the internet. Well, journalists at least, but it'll be interesting to see if regular people, you know, who don't even know what Uber is care about it at all.
I feel like most people don't know what Uber is or care about Uber.
Yeah, you know, like the other day I tried to explain it to my girlfriend. She was like, what's that, Uber?
In fact, we probably should have explained what it was before we even started talking about it. It's like being able to call a car from your iPhone anywhere you are. And it's actually kind of a convenient service in some regards. But as I said, I've had mixed experiences with it. And there's no way I'm going to tell you about my bad experience now. Because let's be honest, I got a lot of skeletons in my closet. And I cannot afford to have Uber investigate me and divulge all the personal things that I've done in my life that I want one to know about. I've taken some very questionable Uber rides that I wish not to reveal to the public. Any other Uber news, Leander?
Well, no, that was the news of the week here.
Okay, wow, I'm surprised I didn't know about that. Like I said, I think Uber is one of those things that gets a lot of coverage in San Francisco, in the Bay Area.
Yeah, it was all over the press. I mean, you know, it was the national tech story for the last couple of days.
Was it really?
Yeah,
even heard it on NPR. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah,
well, NPR did a big thing on it. And they had Sarah Lacey on, and she was like getting really dramatic about it, and it was, you know, it. The reason Uber is getting so much interest is because they think it's building an infrastructure for on-demand anything. You know, at the moment it's cars, but they're also doing, didn't they buy some delivery startup?
Yeah, they want to deliver your groceries to you, mm-hmm, things like that. You know, they have all these cars that they can move anything that they want through them, whatever you need to.
It's kind of like an Amazon competitor in a way.
Yeah, plus it's the most valuable company in Silicon Valley now. It's like worth $20 billion at the last valuation.
Wow. Didn't one of the guys that start Uber, he also did StumbleUpon, right?
Yeah, Garrett Camp. And I was just reading an interview with him, and his latest startup is some kind of reservation system for restaurants where it's impossible to get a reservation.
Uh-huh.
And so this is aimed, this is the way that Uber started. Uber started because him and his friends were all made millions of dollars in these different startups, and they could never get a taxi when they're going from club to club and restaurant to restaurant here in San Francisco.
That's how Uber started.
Yeah, him and his friends were talking about having their own fleet of private black cars that would sit idling around in garages in different parts of the town, and they could just call them up on their iPhones and hop in a car to go to a nightclub. You know, and then the car would sit there waiting for them to go home.
Wow.
This is where the idea came from, right? And you go back and you think, oh, my God, what a scumbag. And then his latest idea is now his latest problem is getting, reservations at the fanciest restaurants in town. His latest startup is, some way to solve that. But, these guys are Travis, what's his face, the CEO of Uber. I mean, his Twitter avatar for the longest time was the fountainhead from Ayn Rand, right? So you read these interviews with Garrett Camp, and they are the hardest hardcore libertarians. Huh. They believe that they are Superman, that they're the Ubermensch, that they're here to this kind of disruption, putting people out of jobs, destroying the taxi driver industry. We're Superman. This is what we're here for. This is how the human race goes forward.
Wow. I'll be honest, I kind of want to hang out with these guys. do you have his contact information, Leander? I want to go out from club to club with these guys and party.
Like pounding drinks. And
yeah, I want to be a bro.
They're the worst kind of bros.
There's the good bros and there's the bad bros. And these are the bad ones.
Bad bros.
These are the guys that make you chug beers, make you do keg stands even when you've had your fill, and they yell at you if you don't want to keep drinking.
Exactly.
It reminds me of my days partying in frats long, long ago. I wasn't ever in a frat, but I used to attend them from time to time. And there'd always be some frat boy, and he'd come up to you and start yelling at you to make you drink even more than you wanted to.
When I say chug, you say beer. Chug! Beer! Chug! Beer! Now chug those beers!
I'm bringing back old memories. Sorry, guys.
That doesn't happen in England.
England, they just sip them cordially, and every once in a while you clink your
glasses
together.
Pinky out.
Yeah, right. Pinky out. Unless the Stellas get involved, Leander.
Right, I know. Then it gets ugly, yeah.
Then some eyes get bloodied. Okay, well, let's move on from Uber. Let's talk about iWatch news this week. So not really iWatch news, but WatchKit. So these are the APIs that developers are going to be able to use to create the apps for your iWatch, whenever that gets released, your Apple Watch, excuse me, whenever that gets released. Buster, this just got released to developers, am I correct?
Yeah, yesterday, WatchKit.
Tell me more.
It's basically, I was kind of a little bit surprised in how limited WatchKit is. Basically, it's just a tether to your iPhone. All of the apps, none of them run natively on your Apple Watch. They all have to run on your iPhone. But developers can start building for the different resolutions and start getting their apps ready for the launch. There's not really anything too crazy exciting in WatchKit other than there's a new font that's really awesome.
Yes.
And then, it lays out the different interface styles as well, stuff like that.
I thought it was interesting. I was on Apple's developer site and they made a comment about Apple Watch and the kind of the design philosophy, and I want to read you guys this. They said, a watch app complements your iOS app. It does not replace it. Mm-hmm. If you measure interactions in your iOS app in minutes, you can expect interactions on the watch app to be measured in seconds. Interactions need to be brief, and interfaces need to be simple. So echoing what you just kind of said, this kind of reveals a little bit more information about the kind of the intention of the Apple Watch.
Right.
And I was a little, I don't really know how I feel. I kind of have mixed feelings about this because when we first were talking about Apple Watch, you know, for 24 months before before it was revealed to us, it was kind of going to be like this revolutionary new device. And one of the things I'd always said is I hope this doesn't end up being an extension of the apps that you already use on your iPhone, because
yeah.
I love my 6 Plus and the big screen. Why would I want to extend that experience into the world of watches into a tiny screen?
Right.
And now they are working with partners like ESPN and Instagram and American Airlines, and they're those particular companies are testing the API. And I'm like, is this just going to be a watch that you use to bring up an Instagram photo or show your airline ticket at when you're going through checkout? It kind of seems to be what its main function is. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, at least out of the gate. And I do think that's, you know, disappointing with there's no native apps on the Apple Watch. It really is just a tool, so you don't have to pull your iPhone out of your pocket every, you know, 5 minutes, which I think that's just super disappointing. But eventually in 2015, Apple says that native apps will be supported on Apple Watch. So maybe that'll expand the functionality.
Well, it's the same thing when they launched the App Store on the iPhone too, right? I mean, that was pretty, you know, they didn't want people's, they didn't want apps running in the background that would drain your battery life, you know, and you got to go use your phone and it'd be dead because some stupid app had killed it. And a lot of this obviously has to do with preserving battery life, isn't it? I mean, they're going to have a hard enough time getting a full day's charge out of the thing anyway without having some crazy apps running on it.
I guess that's a good point. Yeah, battery life is probably key for them before they can really
and extend
the battery, life on those, because they're only supposed to be, what, 12 hours, 13 hours?
Yeah, but no one's said, but, you know, it's got to be at least a day. Otherwise, I mean, if it's less than a day, they're going to be in trouble, I think. People aren't going to,
but they have said you're supposed to have to charge it every night. So, you know, if you're going about your day for, you know, 12 to 16 hours.
Yeah, right.
Anyway,
yeah,
what were you going to say, Leander?
Well, no, just that. I mean, Apple's always very, you know, I'm sure they have quite a, you know, a fairly ambitious product roadmap for the watch. You know, I'm sure they're looking at generations 2 and 3 already. There's no doubt, and they'll want, you know, that ecosystem of apps and the different things. You know, figure out sort of what people want to do with it, I guess, initially in the first round. And then you'll start to see like more native apps in the next in round 2 and 3.
Yeah, you're right. It's kind of good to keep a more broad perspective with this thing. I mean, they're launching it. It's probably going to have limited capabilities, just like any new product would. I mean, my gosh, my freaking Xbox One has taken a whole year to really get to a point where I feel like it's actually a compelling product for a year. It's just not really been able to do as much as I had hoped. So just like any new product, it's probably going to take a year or two to really kind of, you know, find its pace.
Well, and that's how the iPhone was too, you know. I mean, third-party apps didn't come for the first year either. So I think Apple's kind of taking that same approach with the Apple Watch.
At least they're not talking about web-based apps on the Watch. They're like, all you got to do is go to this website via Safari, and then you'll be able to run an app, and then, you know, you can refresh it whenever you want to enter new data.
Right.
But
there was a pretty funny screenshot that someone shared yesterday of the Android Gear, you know, one of the Samsung watches, and they were showing the interface on that, and it had like a little tiny keyboard.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, all these different buttons. It was like, oh my goodness me, you know, like it's like, okay, this is the alternative, and you're like, yeah, you know, like I actually don't. I'm glad it's you know, they're keeping it simple, because you know it's much smarter.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to start too, it's like limit the interactions but make them very, very high quality, and have it do a couple things really well, and then build the functionality out from there. So I'm not saying I'm not excited about the Apple Watch, but I was a little disheartened to read that statement from Apple, kind of thinking to myself, okay, so this is going to be pretty much exactly what I was hoping it wouldn't be, is, hey, I get to look at my email on my wrist. That's kind of like, well, I have a 6 Plus. Why would I want to do that? Or why would I want to look at an Instagram photo when I could use my big, beautiful 6 Plus?
Yeah,
no, it's going to be more like notification center, isn't it? It's going to be like little notifications.
Totally. Right. Yeah, I think just the hardware is just not there yet for them to be able to do everything that you would want them to be able to do on your wrist too. And so I think that's like WatchKit is kind of a reflection of that. Like the hardware is just not able to be there yet for like having an iPhone on your wrist.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I know there's a lot of rumors about the Apple Watch, but we haven't really gotten much concrete information since they announced it. This thing has really been, mum's the word, Leander, as they say.
About what?
About the Apple Watch. We haven't really gotten very many more details about it.
Right, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, what's the rumor now that it's going to launch in middle of February?
Like spring, possibly March.
Wow. Yeah, we'll see how that actually plays out. But on to other devices. Buster, let's talk about the next iPhone, shall we?
Oh, okay.
So it's funny, we just got the 6 Plus, but here we are talking about the 6 Plus S, the 6S Plus. I'm not even sure what to call it. The 6 Plus. They're talking about how the next iPhone could have a really amazing camera. And Sony brought out a new sensor recently that's able to do 4K video, right, Buster?
Yeah, and HDR 4K video, too.
Oh, I missed that part. So why are people kind of really excited about these new line of sensors?
Well, 4K video would be one. But also, Sony's got like a DSL quality autofocus. So that basically it just tracks the subject wherever. And, you know, autofocus is just like a DSLR. Mm-hmm. And the megapixel count is ginormous, 21 megapixels on the sensor. But for Apple, it might be like more like 16 or something like that. But it would be a gigantic leap for Apple, which has like a 8 megapixel sensor right now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you just see iPhotography jump up. Plus, there's rumors of something even crazier, like a dual lens system or something like that.
Yeah. So, John Gruber recently on his podcast was talking about how he got a tip from a, I think he said from a bird of a bird, which I'm assuming means a source of a source. I don't know.
A friend of a friend.
I don't know what that means. But he was saying that he heard that the next camera on the next iPhone is supposed to be the biggest evolution in camera on the iPhone ever made. And I know that the S iPhones have often been a popular time to upgrade the camera in a big way. For example, on the iPhone 4S, Apple introduced a improved 8 megapixel camera, and that was a big jump in quality over the 4. The 5S had an improved sensor and also got the aperture of 2.2, a true tone flash. So, you know, because they have to make the S, they have to make it a compelling product in some way, right? And everyone kind of knows you're going to get a faster CPU, you're going to get maybe some minor other improvements, but then the other big selling point has been the camera. Yeah. So this could actually end up being somewhat credible, because I was always thinking, man, the 6 Plus is so amazingly, it's upgraded in so many fantastic ways. What could they possibly do on the next version in a year that's going to make it better? Well, I mean, an outstanding camera might be it to really sell these devices. So to your point, Buster, HTC has a camera, the HTC One M8, I should say, has a camera with a kind of a dual lens system. And one of the sensors is really high ultra megapixel, and it's able to absorb more light than other sensors in other phones. And then also one of the sensors, as far as I understand it, is actually able to move. So it provides DSLR-like image quality in that you can change the zoom distance and the aperture. I don't know if you can actually zoom in and out optically. I've never actually used one of those phones, but that was what John Gruber was saying is coming to the next iPhone, potentially.
That sounds crazy.
That you would get DSLR type image quality out of it. Now, let me just say, there's no way. There's no way.
On your iPhone?
On your iPhone, you're going to get the same image quality.
Right, because that depends on the size of the sensor.
I mean, it does. Yeah, you need a 35 millimeter sensor, and that's not going to fit on your iPhone. But, I mean, even just like Micro Four Thirds quality would be, you know, pretty amazing as well.
Yeah, I mean, that would obviously be a huge increase in quality. And I don't know if the iPhone is still the most popular camera on Flickr. Do you guys know?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, obviously, people, you know, love using the camera on their iPhones. And the 6 Plus, I've said this before, has the best camera I've ever used on a mobile device. The image quality on this thing is often surprises me. I can't believe how good it is and how able this camera is to do things that even point-and-shoot cameras that I've used haven't been able to do.
Why do people still complain about megapixels? Because I thought that debate was over and had been over for several years. But on the phones, I mean, you know, other phone manufacturers keep bringing it up, don't they? As though it's a differentiator.
I think it's a gimmick. Yeah, it can make a big difference. For example, when I got my iPhone 6 Plus hijacked from me, if I had a camera with a higher megapixel count, I would have been able to zoom in and gotten the number off the license plate. Yeah, absolutely. So megapixels are really good at capturing more detail. But
they're good for blowing it up, aren't they? If you want to blow something up,
exactly.
Exactly.
But other than that, I mean, it doesn't really make any difference as far as image quality. You could have really crappy looking megapixels and really good looking megapixels. In fact, one of the best cameras I've ever used is probably about 5 years old. It's the Nikon D3S. I think that thing is 12 megapixels, and it has the best looking images, and it can practically see in the dark because all the pixels are so large that it's really good at capturing light in incredibly low light situations. And those things still sell on eBay for $2,000-$3,000 because they're such great cameras. And again, 12 megapixels. So, you know, it's not all about the actual amount of pixels. Oftentimes it has to do with the quality. And that's one of the things that I've liked about Apple. And Buster, I know you mentioned this in your Cult of Mac, in your Cult of Mac piece, is that the sensor quality is what Apple normally goes after. Like, they're really smart about making the sensors as high quality as possible so that your images look as good as they possibly can, even though they may not be, you know, 20 megapixels. But I mean, unless someone's trying to escape in a Subaru while they're stealing your iPhone, I don't know why you would need that.
Yeah.
In any case, so you could potentially be seeing the best camera ever put into any phone on the next iteration. John Gruber seems to think so, and some of the other rumors that we've seen floating around, especially about this Sony sensor, seem to indicate that we could see a major, major change in the next camera, which I'll probably be buying. How about you guys?
Yeah, that's kind of, honestly, it kind of bums me out because I wanted to skip one. You know, I thought the 6 Plus would be I'll just not upgrade next year. But if they make the camera way better, I always upgrade because my iPhone is my camera now. So.
Yeah, right. Well, that's true for a lot of people. I mean, that's its most important, probably is, you know,
most I think, yeah, the most important thing. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, same here. I mean, it's my main camera for life, right? And for selfies. And Buster, I know for you, taking pictures of that beautiful dog that you have.
Oh, yeah. And it's,
that majestic creature that you own. Okay, well, let's go ahead and move on. I do want to talk about... I want to bring up this insanely fun Steve Jobs story that I wonder, Leander, if you heard. It was recently posted on Cult of Mac. You probably read it. And then also we're going to be talking about the gadgets that we're reviewing currently. But before we do that, I want to thank lynda.com for supporting this episode. Let me tell you guys about my relationship with Lynda. I say that jokingly, but I actually really do love Lynda, and I've been using lynda.com for about 10 years. And I've used it to learn all sorts of applications. I mean, if you guys remember a Dreamweaver HTML editor, I use it to learn that. Because in college, especially, I was kind of majoring in programming and business, so I used a lot of applications like that. I used it to learn Aperture when I wanted to learn how to edit photos in Aperture. And when I decided to move to Lightroom 4 and then Lightroom 5, lynda.com is what I used to learn both of those apps. And I'm very proficient now in Lightroom 5. And more than just learning the application, I learned how to edit a photo well to really make them pop. And those are principles that I actually have carried over to editing on the iPhone. There are a lot of things, the same exact things I used to do in Lightroom, I now do with my iPhone photography. When I wanted to learn Ruby on Rails, I turned to lynda.com to learn the foundations. And what a lot of people don't realize is lynda.com isn't just for individuals. You can do group memberships, so tons of businesses and organizations use it to help their workforces and their employees learn new skills and applications. You can also use it to learn things that don't have anything to do with applications, but actual business fundamentals or marketing fundamentals. Like, for example, right now, they have a course on the fundamentals of MailChimp. So if you're sending out a lot of email newsletters and you're not really sure how to do that, you can go take their MailChimp Fundamentals course, and MailChimp, of course, is one of the most popular mass email marketing tools out there. You could also learn how to use compression and dynamic processing in your audio applications. A lot of people ask me how I get the podcast to sound so incredibly good, and besides just sheer talent, one of the ways I've done that is through compression. And compression, of course, makes things that are too loud and things that are too quiet kind of more evened out. And it's one of the reasons I switched to Logic, actually, so I could compress this show in a better way and make it sound better so that, you know, my booming voice sounds just as genteel as Leander's or Buster's. So, you know, we all kind of have the same levels, even though in the actual recording, our levels are actually different. Some of us are louder than others, oftentimes me, because I speak really loud. In fact, I've gotten reprimanded in several jobs for speaking too loud. So lynda.com, if you need to learn an application, if you're trying to learn the fundamentals of business or marketing, so much stuff on there. They now have 3,119 courses for you to choose from. You can learn any of them, all with a free trial. And now the free trial is 10 days. They used to be 7, now it's 10. Learn all you want for free for 10 days. Head on over to lynda.com, that's lynda.com/cultcast. I love Lynda. I think you will too. Give it a shot. I want to thank Lynda for supporting this episode. Hey guys, before we move into this fun Steve Jobs story, can I just mention the Yosemite update that recently came out? So we got update 10.10.1, and it was supposed to resolve Wi-Fi issues. Have you guys been having any Wi-Fi issues since installing Yosemite?
Negative.
Really? Okay, I've been having a ton. I've been plagued with them.
Huh.
But I've always had them.
Yeah,
that's
actually true.
I'm not sure if it's any better or any worse with Yosemite.
It's just the same for you.
Yeah, exactly. Same headache.
So for me, I've been having a ton, and unfortunately, there's been some murmurings on the Apple forums that people are saying that the issue still isn't fixed. It's still not fixed for me either. So if you're experiencing Wi-Fi connectivity issues, you are not alone. I'm having the same headache, so hopefully Apple will be fixing them sometime soon. I can't connect to Wi-Fi oftentimes. I have to totally reset my router or reset my my Wi-Fi connection on my Mac. It's such a major hassle. So hopefully they'll fix that soon. Let's talk about a Steve Jobs story before we move on to under review. Leander, I thought this was great, and I'll be interested to hear your thoughts on this piece. So John Brownlee wrote a story on Cult-O-Mac, and it was an anecdote that he said perfectly describes Steve Jobs. And it's a metaphor for Apple as a whole. And I was kind of like, okay, let's check this out. So let me read you guys this really fast. This is a story that a former Apple employee was relaying, I think, in, I forget who he was telling it to, but we got our hands on it. So he said, when engineers were working on the very first iPod and completed the prototype, they presented their work to Steve Jobs for his approval. Jobs played with the device, scrutinized it, of course, weighed it in his hands and promptly rejected it. He said it was too big. The engineers explained that they had to reinvent inventing just to create the iPod, and it was simply impossible to make it any smaller. So Jobs was quiet for a moment, and finally he stood. He walked over to the aquarium, and he dropped the iPod in the aquarium. And after it touched the bottom, several bubbles floated to the top, and he said, those are air bubbles. That means there's space in there. Make it smaller. Cojones, Leander. Cojones.
Right, I know. It's a great story and abusive to his poor engineers. Yeah, right. So totally up his...
Let me take your prototype and dunk it.
But you know what? Who has the gall to do something like that to prove a point? I mean, he could have just talked about, oh, come on, guys. I know you could do better. I'm going to give him a pep talk. I mean, how succinct is that point? It's like, you see those air bubbles?
Right. It's just sitting in there.
I mean, it's genius. What, is it not genius?
What kind of aquarium was it? Do you think it was one of those giant ones with sharks floating around?
Yeah. Oh,
I just chomped it, I hope.
It probably had piranhas in it.
More than likely, yeah.
And afterward, he grabbed the engineer by the scruff of his neck and put his face in there. And he's like, there's like all these bubbles coming around. And he pointed to the other engineers and he's like, get to work. I added that last part of the story.
Did Brownlee say where that story came from? Who was the which engineer was in particular?
I don't know. I feel like I heard that story.
Yeah. You know what? You give me a second. I'm going to bring it up. He said, okay, it was originally posted on Quora by ex-Apple employee Amit Chandhari. Do you know who that is?
That doesn't ring a bell, no.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Those are the kind of stories that make Steve Jobs legendary. No one does stuff like that anymore these days, Leander. Everyone's like Mr. Nice Guy. They don't dunk your head in a tank full of piranhas and let it eat your face off.
Except if you're maybe at Uber, they will.
Except if you're at Uber, yeah.
That's right.
You go into the tank along with your family.
Yeah, so it's a tank of bourbon.
Yeah, right. And then they make everyone chug out of it once you're dead.
That's what they did to Lord Nelson when he was killed at the Battle of Trafalgar.
They drowned him in a tank full of brandy?
They preserved him in a barrel of brandy, and then all the sailors drank it afterwards.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yep.
Why did they decide to do that?
Well, because they wouldn't get all stinky, you know. They
okay. Why did they decide to put him in the barrel in the first place? Why did they want to preserve him?
Because he was killed in a battle at sea, and they want to preserve his body for a state funeral.
Oh, okay. Now it's starting to make more sense. And then they were like, well, it's perfectly good brandy. We can't just not drink it.
Well, they loved him, too, so... You know, they were happy to drink his fluids.
Like, hopefully they, like, cleaned him off first or, I don't know, let him go to the bathroom or something.
I don't know all the details. This is a few years ago.
That sounds gross. Okay, well, let's move on to the last segment of the show. We're calling Under Review. And we've done this segment before. We just have never called it this, as I mentioned. And this is a segment that I like doing because it allows us to talk about some of the things that we're reviewing. And we could talk about both the good and the bad things of the products that we're reviewing. So does anyone want to go first? Leander, you said you had some headphones or something that you've been peeking at, right?
No, it's a case. It's a wallet case.
Oh, okay. Do tell.
From this European company. And hold on. Let me just grab it right here. It's by Nodus. And... NODUS, mm-hmm. And the case is called the Access Case, and so it's like a leather wallet case with mm-hmm. a pocket on the inside. So there's not actually card slots; there's just one large slot,
mm-hmm.
Which is both sort of like a blessing and its biggest downfall. Mm-hmm. But this thing's really nicely made. I mean, it's really high quality leather.
Tell me the name again. Sorry. Tell me the name
Nodus.
Again.
Nodus.
I'm trying to look for it online. So,
and
okay.
It's called the Access Case. Yeah. And I think they're out of Holland. I think they're out of Amsterdam. They might be British, though. I forget. But they have this micro suction pad that's really weird. Well, it's sticky, uh-huh. You know, but it's not sticky. It's made out of these little tiny microscopic suction cups.
Yeah. I've used accessories that have that stuff on there before, and they stick to anything.
Yeah, and it works amazingly well. So you stick your phone inside the case, and it makes it really thin because, you know, they just have to have one, you know, a couple of sheets of leather on the back. Mm-hmm. They don't have and you don't put it into it. Like a lot of the other wallet cases have a big sort of bulky plastic case that you slot the phone into.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And that's how it holds it in there. So this thing sticks with the micro suction pad, and they have another one on the other side so that it sticks to your screen to keep the to keep it closed
mm-hmm.
when you're not using it. And it works really, really well. I mean, and the nicest thing about it is like the quality of this thing, like the leather and the stitching and the build quality is beautiful. It's really, really a nice
so
case.
So it closes, it sticks to the screen via that micro suction
right.
strip. Okay. I'm looking at it right now. You're right. These look really beautiful.
Yeah. These are luxe. These are super nice.
And they have an iPad model as well.
Right, and the iPad model is actually better. I'm using that for the iPad Mini, and I think that's great. I think it's really super nice case.
Definitely not cheap.
No.
They're like 80 to 90 euros, which is like $600 euros. US. Yeah. Right. Oh, wait, no, I take that back. They are British. They're 80 to 90 pounds, Leander.
Oh, that's even worse. Okay.
Wow.
That's worse, yeah. So they're pretty pricey.
Yeah, dang. This is pretty posh. This is the lifestyle of Leander, ladies and gentlemen.
This is the baller lifestyle. I want to hang out with my friend Uber. Flash the cash for the leather case.
He drinks brandy that have had the bodies of dead men, you know, soaked in. I mean, this is just how he lives his life, guys.
That's it. Yep.
You too could probably get to halfway at this level if you try hard.
And, you know, the trouble is that things fall out of the pocket there. That's the only downside.
Wait, what pocket? I don't see a pocket.
Well, it has a pocket on the inside,
okay.
Like a one sort of slot.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I kept a couple of cards in there, and unfortunately, you know, they slipped out. That was a big problem.
Ooh, that's not good.
No.
We've been talking a lot about cases recently. I know people are really interested in what we're using for the iPhone 6 and the 6 Plus. So this is great. And what I like about this, Leander, is that it actually keeps itself closed. I know I've seen some cases that are similar to this recently, like the Patent Quill. No, it wasn't Patent Quill, was it? It was the Surface. Oh, it was 12 South, the Surface Pad. for the iPhone. Right. And that case looks really fantastic, except it doesn't actually stay closed. So if you accidentally dropped your phone while it was in the case and it landed on the screen, you're kind of like SOL. So this thing would actually, you know, probably protect your iPhone a little bit better if you dropped it, I would guess.
Possibly, yeah. Those, I mean, I've got a pen and quill one, which I'm using. That's got a bunch of slots. And, you know, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 cards in here, plus a couple of business cards. And, you know, it's not, the thing is, it's kind of, then it's kind of like, you know, it's with the iPhone 6 Plus, it's kind of like a big, it's pretty bulky.
I was just going to ask if you can fit this thing in your pocket. You almost need like a purse.
Yeah, well, I wear these really hideously misshapen jeans, and you know they got giant pockets and they sag everywhere. And,
have you so switched to wearing Tracy's jeans now? It's like mom jeans.
Well, these are more like Steve Jobs' granddad jeans.
He did wear granddad jeans, didn't he?
Right.
Those jeans that he wore. Oh, those are perfect. And he probably had foresight. He knew the kind of devices we'd be carrying in the future.
Right.
So he his jeans were just way ahead of their time. Yeah, like how I spun were. That?
Yep.
So thenoticecollection.com if you guys want to check these out. Buster, what do you got?
Do I have to talk about hardware or can I talk about a movie?
I mean, you're supposed to talk about hardware, but if you don't have anything, you can talk about a movie if you want. Go for it.
Okay, so I am going to talk about a movie because I saw this movie last night. Sure. And actually, it reminds me of the Steve Jobs story. Whiplash, have you heard of it?
I haven't, no.
Okay, so it's about basically this kid going to like a Juilliard of jazz schools. He's a drummer, and he basically rising through the ranks in his orchestra. It's kind of reminds me of like Social Network. It's a motivational story, but he's led by a teacher who's basically just an asshole, just like Steve Jobs, just like a tyrant. Throws like drum cymbals at his, you know, orchestra, like his, you know, people playing music, just belittles them, makes them feel just horrible. And the movie is just like about, you know, kind of eking performance out of, you know, people. Like, how do you get like a great, like tap into like your greatness? So the whole movie, it's just this jazz composer conductor just beating the crap out of this kid emotionally. And then at the end, it's, I won't spoil it at the end, but it's got a really awesome really awesome finishing. If you haven't heard about it yet, I would go see it. I think it's Oscar worthy. Whiplash.
Whiplash. Is this Whiplash, like a major motion picture, or is it?
I think it's a little bit indie-ish. It's got Miles Teller. He was from The Spectacular Now and Divergent, and J.K. Simmons.
No idea who that is.
He's one of those that guys. You know, he was in. Burn After Reading, Spider-Man, The Closer.
What did you mean by one of those guys?
Well, one of those guys, like that guy. He's that guy. You know, it's like when you see him on screen, you're like, oh, it's that guy. You know,
I'm looking at J.K. Simmons now. I know exactly who you're talking about. Yeah. And I know his face, didn't know his name. And there's actually a documentary I watched not too long ago called That Guy Who Was In That Thing. And yeah, it's all about like the actors that everyone knows but doesn't actually know who they are, but they're in all these different movies. And a lot of those actors are in it, and they talk about how it's hard to scrape by making a living in Hollywood, even when you're like at a level that they're at, because like pretty much only the A-list actors are well paid, and everyone else gets paid crap. I think J.K. Simmons was actually in that documentary,
but I
can't remember.
he plays the conductor, and oh my goodness, like he's really awesome in that.
He's top quality in those Allstate commercials too.
Yeah, he's just, you know. Gorgeous.
Okay, well, what was the name of the movie again? Whiplash.
Whiplash. Okay. It's on theaters.
I'll round it out then. So I've got a product that I have wanted to talk about for a while. So y'all know that I love me some standing desks, y'all. I love standing desks. In fact, I think everyone should be switching to a standing desk because it's just made such a huge improvement in my life. I think I talked about one last show. We've had Varidesk sponsor this show several times. They make a great portable standing desk. And the problem with a lot of standing desks is they're really expensive and they're really huge. Oftentimes, they're both. So I've been reviewing one for a while, and it's made by Next Desk, Buster, who I know you reviewed one of their models as well, right? It was the
beautiful desks.
So Next Desk makes really beautiful desks. They're made from bamboo. They have a really high attention to detail. And they're power desks, like a lot of stand-up desks are. They have a little control module, and you can, you know, press a button that goes up and down. It has memory settings and all that. But what's great about this one is, I should tell you the name. It's called the Next Desk Solo Plus. And what's different about this one is it's actually really small. So if you don't have a lot of space in your office or what have you, I think it's 48 inches across. And it fits in really tight corners, and it's really just enough space for maybe a laptop or maybe a single iMac. So you're not going to be putting like your picture frames and all your hard drives and all your plethora of accoutrement on your desk with this. It's just really understated and simple, very beautiful as well. And I think it's affordable. It's $1,000, which I know sounds like a lot of money for a desk, but man, I mean, Buster, you know, standing desks can be thousands of dollars.
Yeah, and I mean the Next Desk build quality, it's so just simple. I feel like it's very Apple-like in many ways.
I agree. Yeah, it is very Apple-like. They have bamboo surfaces, so they're a little bit higher scale than a lot of the ones that are out there. They always build them as they use sustainable, you know, building practices to build them. And I got to say, their CEO, who I've spoken to, is just a heck of a guy.
Oh, so nice.
He's just a really nice guy. I just like them as a company, period. Yeah. So I'm happy to give them some press, and I think they make really good products. And this desk, as I said, it's called the Next Desk Solo. The only thing I would say I don't particularly like about it is the feet on it are a little bit weird. They kind of protrude out from the desk in a strange way. Not a deal breaker for me, but some people may not like that. And then also because this is only on a single beam that rises and falls, you know, instead of two, Buster, like a normal desk would be.
Yeah,
that when you're pressing on the front, it kind of feels like it's spring-loaded a little bit, like the desk will bend towards you just slightly.
Yeah,
because it doesn't have legs at all four corners. You have to put a lot of pressure to make that happen, but it is something that I've noticed. And you know, it could be fun, like maybe if you want to get rid of like an old computer, you can like bend it down and then release it and shoot the computer across the room. I don't know. Yeah. Office fun at the office. Try it. Nextdesk.com. I'm sorry, nextdesks.com. And as I said, it's $1,000. But you know, I think it's a good spend considering some desks are you could spend $3,000 or $4,000 on a standing desk.
Yeah. I love my next desk. It's awesome. I still use it all the time.
Leander, you're using a stand-up desk too now, aren't you?
Yeah, but then I got a bar stool, so I mostly sit down at my standing up desk.
Oh, so you never actually raise it?
Yeah, my standing up desk is an IKEA desk on some plant parts.
You know, you can do that, and that works pretty well for free. Yeah. If you want to do something like that. But, I mean, it's not as posh as being able to stand and sit, you know, with power. And that's the thing. I mean, I think you need to have something that raises and lowers. It doesn't necessarily need to be powered. But yeah, as someone who's owned a standing desk for a while, your back gets tired. And my calves are just barking at me by the end of the day if I stand too much. Buster, would you agree?
Oh, totally. I mean, that's the nice thing about it is you got the electronic motors, so it just switches between standing and sitting.
Plus, it looks really cool. I mean, aren't people impressed when you show it to them?
And sounds really cool.
Sounds like the Terminator when he's moving. So that's a plus. And plus, the ladies love it. Show your standing desk off to the ladies, and they're so impressed. They'll want to go on dates with you. Would you agree, Buster?
Oh, I get so many date requests. Just from people from the window. It's just like, damn, I want to make out.
Look at that guy. His calves are on point. All righty. Well, I think that we should go ahead and wrap it up there, Gentry. What do you say?
Wow, it feels short.
I know. I almost feel like I'm gypping people. But believe it or not, that's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. If you want to tell us what iPhone 6 case you have been using or talk about any of the products that we mentioned on the show, reach out to us on Twitter. Buster is BST3R. Leander is L. Caney. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. And of course, for all the best news, reviews, and outdos in the world of Apple, make sure you're following Cult of Mac. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30 plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night, including next week for Thanksgiving. We'll be right back here on Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you dudes next time. For sure. For sure next time.
Gobble, gobble.
Clear. Oh, yeah.
All well, right.
Gobble, 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 y'all.
Oh,
what are we?
We can't leave out Gobble Gobble, y'all. That's a Cultcast tradition.
What?
Oh, yeah, it's very entertaining. Let's bring on LeCain here.
Get away, dog. Go away.
Dude, go. Your dog's nards are... They're the biggest dog nards I've ever seen. Because you posted that picture on Instagram, and even though he was like probably only 10% of the actual image frame, those nards are just, it's like, boom, there they are. Are they still there? Dude. Did you? Dude. I thought you were getting him fixed.
No way. Keeping that man alive.
Man.
I walk him in the park, and sometimes they're just like, dude, check out the balls on that dog.
I'm sure people whisper to each other when he walks by. What kind of dog is he?
He's a Rhodesian Ridgeback.
Rhodesian. Hey, you know what they say about dogs and owners, right?
They take
similar constructs.
Hey.
That's why Leander has a Shih Tzu.
What?